Well, good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday morning. It is the 29th of June. We are winding down another month. The first half of the year is almost complete. Hopefully you have survived it. So, good morning. Welcome. And it is very nice to have you all with us on this morning. Let me introduce our panel to you, and we will get started and talk about the news of the day. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm going to visit my new granddaughter tomorrow, so I won't be able to join you. But it's really very complicated. I had to find two German shepherds to be in the house along with a guy with muscles to protect the house. So that took a long time. Get what I mean? Since I said I wouldn't be here.
Oh, I got you. I got you. You kind of threw me off at the German shepherds, but I got you now.
What, did I say something wrong about German shepherds?
No.
They're shepherds, but they are German.
Yeah, and they're the security force.
They are, and you should see the muscles on the guy who I had to hire to sit at the house.
There you go. So now, for the important
part. Former policeman with a gun.
You know, it usually takes me 15 minutes for me to not follow the conversation. You've started it right off.
So now, I'm sorry, and I know we're...
Yeah, with using
we're
time,
all journalists here in the room.
Serious.
No. But here's my question for you, because I'm sorry, because I think we buried the lead. We learned earlier this week that you have a new granddaughter.
Oh.
I don't believe on Monday, however,
right.
We knew the name of your granddaughter.
Well, we know it now. That is for sure. It's Hannah Camille. H-A-N-A, Hannah Camille, right? And
Hannah Camille.
I knew you were going there. No, she's a
that's great.
Full head of hair, gorgeous, wonderful. I can't wait to pick the little baby up.
Excellent.
Wow.
So congratulations to you and to Roselle
and, of course, to your daughter, Sarah.
Yes,
and Dan, too.
From beginning to end.
Dan and the whole crew. So
yeah.
That's great. Very, very good.
Wow.
Well, that is exciting news. So we will miss you tomorrow.
Yeah.
But we will see you back on, but just for people who actually plan this kind of stuff, and I know some people do, we're on the air Monday. We were going to take Tuesday off for July 4th, and then we'll be back on Wednesday. Also, further planning ahead, on Friday, a week from tomorrow, we will be at Tanglewood.
We will, and we always love that so much.
Yeah, so it's very, very special.
Gives us a chance to Mark Volpe, the head of Tanglewood, to come on. We give him as hard a time as we possibly can.
It's always fun. Yeah. So all of that coming up in the days ahead. Hey, Ira Fussfeld is here. He is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman and just fresh from a media project flogging, I think.
It was sort of not bad. I think we did all right until Alan threw me a curve right at the end. But I think we parted as friends. Is that fair enough?
No.
Oh.
We said threw you a curve was a question that you did not know how to answer, was it a shot?
I actually thought that I said something that he was going to agree with, and he sort of set me back. So I either didn't explain it right, or he just surprised me.
Well,
we don't know. It's a work in progress.
I don't remember.
See, I don't think I'm saying anything either out of turn or that Alan will be upset with, but sometimes Alan is contrary for the sake of being contrary.
What? That's true.
But, is that true?
But not usually from one sentence to the other.
Well, it depends.
He's channeling his inner Trump.
If he can give you a shot in the process, you know he's going to do that.
Yeah, in the prostate.
Well, what we were talking about was close to the prostate if it was a female.
All right, never mind.
All right, let's... Okay,
Teresa,
that went downhill.
Talking about Trump, so anything goes.
Teresa Bourgeois is here. She is a communications consultant, and we're thrilled to have her join us. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Delighted to be here.
You look very very springy, but
little springish.
Very nice. Good to see you. Thank you very much for being with us. Let's go to what's happening in the world. We welcome your letters, by the way. Panel at WAMC.org. What were you going to say, Alan?
You said, let's go, and I said, too loud.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So
you really are feisty today, aren't you?
So yesterday morning, we were saying, well, they're going to postpone the health care bill. And now everybody is saying, oh, my God, we have to get it done by Friday. We got to get it done by Friday. Now,
I predicted that.
You did.
I said this is nonsense. This isn't over.
Okay. So, but it still seems that they don't have the votes, and it still seems that it's going to be very, very difficult to resuscitate this, especially given the very short time frame that they have. Although in one of the things that I was reading last night from the New York Times, that they may go to this really archaic, strange, out of the box thinking way of doing it, which is called bipartisanship.
Right. But if they if they go to bipartisanship, then they have to keep what we call the Affordable Care Act, or in some form, or Obamacare. And that's the one thing they can't do, because their entire politics revolves around Obamacare bad, Obamacare bad. Now we see 15% of the country support this Republican bill, something like 15%, and everybody else hates it, and they still want to do it. You want to know why? Because when Mitch McConnell talks to people about it's called turtle talk. Talks to people, what he's going to say to them is, "Do you really want to be in the minority? Do you really want to be in the minority? Because if we can't do this, we're going to look bad, and we got to stay in the majority, and therefore you got to come up and save our political hash here."
I heard Senator McConnell on CNN yesterday, and I believe it was at a gaggle, and he, you said 15%. I think the number, I believe the number is that NPR is using a 17% approval. It doesn't matter.
Shame on me.
I actually saw 12 somewhere.
But my point is, no, the only reason I'm saying that is because, not because of that, but because when McConnell turned around, he said, "Well, you know, almost a quarter of the people in this country agree with me." And I thought, well, that's not a plus, right? I mean,
right.
We're a far cry, whether it's 15, 17, or 12, still a far cry from a quarter of the people. Well, and even that is not a lot.
Right. He's going with the 33 to 38% of the people who support Trump. That's what his quarter is all about.
Well, the Democrats, I think, for a minority party with actually no power, are in actually pretty good shape here, because they're taking the position that we're perfectly willing to negotiate with the Republicans as long as we start from the position that we're not repealing Obamacare, we're fixing Obamacare.
They can't do that.
But if they don't accept their entree, or if they just step back and say, "You figure it out," they are either not going to pass a bill, which they promised they were going to do, and they can't even do it when they control all the branches of government, or they're going to pass a bill that's extraordinarily unpopular. So I don't know that the Democrats are in a bad position here, other than if somehow the bill is passed. And if the bill is passed and it's extraordinarily unpopular, then the Democrats are in a good position going into the next election cycle.
Teresa.
Right. I think the Democrats need to just step back and let the Republicans figure this out, or not internally, because they can't. But on the issue of bipartisanship, Joe, that's the thing that was so stunning to me when Senator McConnell got the Trump to invite all the Republicans down to the White House to meet with them. He came out after that and he threatened to begin negotiating with Democrats. Step back and think about that. He's using as a weapon, as a sort of a verbal weapon to his membership, that if you don't get on board, I'm going to engage in bipartisan discussions with my
colleagues. He doesn't even care what's in the bill. He just wants to pass something.
But think about that in terms of our democracy. I mean, that is outrageous that he would use, and in fact, Senator Schumer went to the Senate floor yesterday on this very point and said, "What have we come to when you're using the idea of, talking with your fellow colleagues who happen to be Democrats as a cudgel, as a weapon?" And it really philosophically is a horrible thing,
but I get it, because it's real politics. And what he's really saying is what I said before. You want to be in the minority? You want to have no power, the power of warm spit? Is that what you want?
But I do think that the senators and the House members, the Republican senators and House members, that the public has moved on this issue in terms of building understanding and support for the ACA, for Obamacare, and the Republican rhetoric has not moved on. And that's the problem.
Okay, but why not?
Because they said it for 7 years. They got away with saying that they were going to do something that they were never going to be able to do. Now, when it comes time to put it down on paper, to have an actual legislative proposal that lowers premiums, improves coverage, and gets government out of health care. You cannot do those things.
You know, it reminds me of the two-year-old who just won't stop. You've proven to the two-year-old that their actions are irrational. They're stomping their foot on the ground. They're crying. And they say, I don't care that you're right. I just don't care. And that's what's happening right here.
And they are internally philosophically divided. They have a group of Republicans, Rand Paul at the furthest extreme of this, who really truly believe that government should not be involved in health care. It shouldn't be involved in Medicaid, probably not Medicare either, but that you need to just let the markets work. And then you have people like Senator Collins and yeah. Senator Helen and others who believe that you do have to have some government engagement in health care, but then how much can you afford and still pay for the tax cut? So whether they can bridge that gap, I don't know. It was interesting on the way in, I was hearing a Republican senator, talking about one of the tax cuts that they have been proposing that would go away, that was imposed as part of the ACA, which is a tax on higher income people, that they would maybe not rescind that tax. And then that would give them another $100 billion to work with to do some of these other things.
But I can't imagine. What happened to the fine art of compromise?
Well, that's what's so upsetting to me about this notion that Senator McConnell would say, you know, it's like talking to children. You know, don't make me pull this car over and come back there.
Turn this car around and go.
Don't make me talk to those Democrats.
This is not the first time or the first era where there were differing points of view within the Senate or within the Congress or in the White House, and somehow or other, more often than not, the people who had good intentions on all sides got together. Nobody got everything they wanted, but at the end of the day, there was some sort of action. What's going on now is unconscionable. The public is sitting here watching the spectacle of them spinning their wheels and arguing with each other. And by the way, I would ask a question because I'm not 100% sure I'm right. I'll ask to the self-described policy wonk. If the Senate passes some sort of a health bill right now, that's not the end of the story,
no.
Right? It then has to go back to the Congress. There has to be reconciliation. So for all of this discussion about rushing it through by the July 4th recess and all of that, this thing has got...
Well, the idea...
Well, you forgot the party in the Rose Garden.
I don't think he cares at all.
No.
I don't think he cares at all. He just wants a success.
Yeah, you have to have the party.
He just wants to get a rose, right?
Let's picture a bill coming out of the
House. It's like The Bachelor.
Yeah, he didn't get a rose or to go to the
picture a bill coming out of the Senate that who knows what form it will be. The House is then going to pick at it. And we know how much trouble the House had passing its own bill. So.
Okay, so let me just turn around and say, well, let's say that nothing comes out of that. They don't do anything over the next 24 hours or 36.
Well, they
hours.
Won't vote because they have to rescore the bill.
Right. So, but even that they can't come to any sort of consensus amongst the senators as to what they want to do. So, and then they decide they're going to move on. Well. We still then have a president who seems hell-bent on destroying what we already have
He's already taken steps that has that effect.
So that just means it becomes
he's a petulant piglet.
That it's just going to keep coming back and back and back. I mean, eventually, I guess something will get passed, but it doesn't seem as though, because it will almost have to if the entire system implodes, right?
Right. So, and this is what President Trump said earlier this year, that the Democrats can just do nothing. And then we'll see what happens because Obamacare is going to implode. Well, Obamacare is going to implode because he's imploding it. And so there will. Now, the other thing I was listening, there's two great reporters on healthcare, Julie Rovner and Mary Agnes Carey, and they happened to do a Q&A on C-SPAN. Did you see that?
I saw a portion of it.
I saw a little bit. I had it on in the background last night. So if anybody is interested, it was a great Q&A. The citizens, callers called in and they answered their questions. It was really interesting. But one of the things that they both pointed out is The part of Obamacare that's not working is a part that's not working for 17 million people. And the rest is working. And so it's really, and that's the people on the, some portion of the people on the exchanges because their premiums are too high and they can't get coverage. And so really, it's not the whole system that's not working. And if the House, I mean, if the Democrats and Republicans could come together and figure out, you know, it's a fixable group. It's fixable. It's fixable.
We call it universal health care.
Right.
It's fixable. And interestingly, I'm not so sure that what we're witnessing now, all this chaos, isn't going to lead to that.
Right.
So I don't.
But a lot of people are going to suffer if they do nothing. A lot of people are going to suffer. Rural hospitals are going to suffer. It's going to be a problem if they do nothing.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue on this. Alan has some letters. We will get more, and we welcome your letters, too. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Teresa Bourgeois, and your call, your questions via email, panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Teresa Bourgeois. During the break, I think we've become somewhat immune to the president's tweeting, although I have to say that Teresa was reading us the latest tweets that came just around when we started the program this morning. And even that, you know, every once in a while you get shocked by what he writes.
This latest tweet is the one where that you're going to see this afternoon a little white van pull up to the front of the White House with and pull him out with a straitjacket.
I heard poorly rated Morning Joe speaks badly of me. Don't watch anymore. Then how come low IQ crazy Mika along with psycho Joe came? Second tweet, to Mar-a-Lago three nights in a row around New Year's Eve and insisted on joining me. She was bleeding badly from a facelift. I said no. And I know we're not supposed to try to figure out what he means by it, but what does he mean if they came there for three nights, what did he say no to?
That they eat with him. That they join him.
Insisted on joining me. Yeah. I see. Yeah. I see.
Yeah,
because she was bleeding.
Yeah, they Morning Joe and Mika have long ago described them going to Mar-a-Lago for the night of a New Year's Eve party, and they were not party guests. They said they went to talk to him about I don't know being a guest or whatever it was. So they've never hidden the fact that they were there. The rest of this stuff is just wacko. I mean, we don't know what they talked about. We don't know whether she had a facelift. We don't know whether she was bleeding. We do know that this is not the stuff that presidents should be tweeting about.
Well, Ira, you know, if you turn the television on at 4 o'clock in the morning when I get up or 3 o'clock in the morning, you will see all the anti-bullying campaigns that are on.
Right.
And this guy is a classic bully.
And his wife is supposedly shepherding that drive.
Right, that's her.
Not
that's
bullying,
her issue.
Right,
no, she wants
anti-bullying.
Yeah, well, she must know what she's doing.
She's not. She's not rolling over in bed and saying anything to her partner.
Well, I'm not going there.
Yeah. Well, I really think that. I think this is a. I'm sorry.
No, you took a very subtle pause there. I like that. That was very funny. Go ahead.
I'm letting that go.
No, go ahead, Teresa. I'm sorry.
Think about today. Today, the head of South Korea is going to the White House.
Yeah, all that's at stake there is nuclear war.
All that's at stake is nuclear war. Today, in the House, they're voting on a sanctuary cities bill, which is very important to a number of cities in New England.
To what end? What does the bill say?
Restrictions on funding for sanctuary cities. Today... in this week, 4,000 plus more troops are going to Afghanistan, you know, quietly without a lot of attention, a further troop buildup after we
But
had
your
a
point
troop
is that well taken. But the point here really and is, wait. I think the point really is that people are taken with what this nut job is going to do every morning with his tweets than with the potential for nuclear war in Korea.
What is his focus on? What is our president of the United States focused on?
He's focused
on Morning Joe instead of focused on this morning what troops are going. What about the other families?
I'm sorry, Teresa. And I really do apologize for interrupting. I do, because I know it's rude. What are you laughing
at? No, it's not rude.
No, he said shit isn't rude.
It wasn't rude.
Yeah. But okay. But here's the point. He is doing what he is convinced works. He thinks tweets work. He thinks that's how he got elected president of the United States.
Oh, okay.
He may be wrong, and you, the policy wonk in the weeds, may be saying, but that isn't right. That isn't what this is all about. He should be doing this. You can't tell that guy that that's what he
But isn't this the Iris point?
Which is what?
That the little white truck's going to come up? I mean, what if it's just nuts?
Think about
the movie Being There. When everyone's
Chauncey
doing this,
Gardner.
They're doing this outside analysis of why is he doing what he's doing and is it strategic, and he's just doing it because he wasn't thinking.
This is frightening to me. But that's not what, see, I love that movie, Being There, and I cite it all the time to a different end. Which is, it wasn't him, it was the outside world which was so taken, and the phony liberals who was so taken with, his idea that he just likes to watch. But in this case, it is Trump himself who has come up with this strategy, and you can't talk him out of the fact that those tweets don't keep his 38% with him, and that he doesn't know what he's doing. He thinks he knows what he's doing.
On this point, I will agree with you. What it'll do is it'll get the media and other people chattering about this and chattering about whether the cameras are on or off, as opposed to chattering about how he can't get health care through and chattering about what's going to happen with North Korea and chattering about his Muslim ban.
The greatest
so
quote
you're
Donald,
right about that.
The greatest quote from Donald Trump was, I love the undereducated, because that's what it's all about. He really knows, unlike you.
I dismiss talking about people as being undereducated like that.
No.
I think he's trying to create a different chatter in the system.
I don't agree with it. I'm telling you that his view of the way it works is, I excite the masses and I throw them red meat when there needs to be a distraction of the kind you've just been outlining so profoundly. And that's what it is. He is convinced that it works for him. When Ira and Joe talk about the little white wagon pulling up in front of the White House, that ain't going to happen because this is a political strategy. It helps him stay in charge. There will be people who write letters and say, Alan, how dare you? No, it isn't me. It is what he is thinking.
Well, ironically, it succeeded in that right now all of us are talking about his tweets and we're not talking about,
exactly.
Well, we did talk about health care, other things.
But I think the larger point is the one that you are making, that this is a distraction that he has set upon. But also, I think, again, I'm going to go back to, and Ira, I'll bring you in on this, but it also seems that a main issue here is the mental condition of our president.
Yes, and the fact that what he is doing with a tweet series of tweets like this, or all of his attacks on the media, or any of the other things that he's been doing that's similar to that, he is lowering the level of discourse in this country and harming the tenets of this democracy to such a degree that it's going to be at least a generation, if that, that we overcome it. I was saying in the media project, when I get to this subject, I become incoherent because it makes me so mad. But this kind of thing, I agree with Alan. He's trying to appeal to his base, and we won't know if that strategy works until the next election cycle.
I think he's demeaning the presidency. He's demeaning the presidency. But listen, Senator Brian Schatz of Hawaii, who is fascinating to follow, he just tweeted, if anyone on my staff did this, they would be fired instantly. And he links to the quote. You worry about what his mind is.
By the way,
about.
I think that would be the policy of most news operations, certainly.
Without a doubt.
You worry about what he's focused his attention on. I realize this is for the purposes of distraction and to get media talking about things other than the policy stuff that they're not doing correctly. But Ira, to your point, it demeans the position of the president.
Yeah. You guys can sit around.
But that's a problem.
You can sit around. You can be the echo chamber. You can talk about the meeting, the presidency. You can talk about all the terrible things that are going on with him. But I am telling you, what's important to understand is how our politics have changed, that this guy now thinks that this is the way that he has been successful, and he's going to stay successful.
Okay, he won, but other than that, none of this has seemed to work. Anything that he has said in these tweets, of whether it's Barack Obama and the wiretapping of the White House, have only got him into more trouble.
Joe, he's the president of the United States. He got there somehow. He got there by calling Marco Rubio Little Marco.
And saying, lock her up.
And lock her up.
But do you think it'll work the next time?
Let me put it this
way,
Ira.
That's the worry.
It worked in Germany.
That's the worry, though, that it will work.
I mean, the reason we're talking about this now, in my opinion, and why it's worth talking about, is the sociology of the situation.
But, Alan, can I ask you, you've studied political science forever.
Yes, I have.
The lying is the other thing that worries me about chipping away at a democracy. The demeaning of the presidency and the lying, whether it's him or whether it's his spokespersons.
Right.
But doesn't that lying have a long-term... I mean,
yes.
The rest of the world can't depend on the word of the president of the United States.
We just talked about bullying. There's a pretty good example. He's a bully. This is going to give sustenance to all the bullies out there, both politically and as children. This is, if the president of the United States can do it, so can I. And when he talks about, I could stand on Fifth Avenue and do something, what was it?
Yeah, you can shoot somebody.
So who's going
to stand up to the bully? Now, we started to see
that's right. The
other day at one of the press briefings when a reporter talked back to the press secretary. But where are the people? Where are the people with backbone?
Which would have been great had he taken the gum out of his mouth.
Oh, I didn't notice that. But where are the people in the Republican Party with the backbone to stand up to this guy?
Well, because it's a question of, do I survive as a politician, or do I get fired?
Or do I stand up for my country and say the hell with me whether I get reelected?
And that's why Jack Kennedy wrote a book called Profiles in Courage.
But okay. I really worry about our democracy. I just think this is... I'm sorry, Joe.
No, go ahead.
I just fear this is chipping away at our democracy. Maybe that's Pollyannish.
Well, of course you're right. I really fear
it's really, little by little, it's chipping away at our democracy, and it's making us unsafe. If something big happens in the world, I mean, we've been lucky in the first couple months, but if there's a big catastrophe, we have a president of the United States that people don't believe what he says because he says different things all the time, and he acts like this in important times. It's not presidential. It's not safe.
I think we're all in the same place. This guy is no good. Nevertheless, I'm trying to point out that the reason he keeps doing these kinds of things is because in his own mind he thinks it works.
Well, I agree with you on that. I mean, I think in his own mind, but I think there's something perhaps wrong with that mind.
He is president of the United States. I agree with that premise also.
And there's nobody, not only in the Republican Party, but nobody in the White House apparently who's capable of standing up and saying, you can't do this.
Because the reports that we have are that everyone is trying to get him to stop doing
this,
including his lawyers, including his family, including all of those around him are stop and saying, you are only creating your own problems, and yet they're unable to stop that.
Okay, here are a couple of letters. No.
Let's take a break and we'll come back to the letters. All right. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back.
We're not fighting. We're all on the same side.
And I hope that light really is accurate, because the four-letter word that I used was when the light was off.
No, you're fine. We would have yelled at you by now.
We have a lot of letters
to read.
What does
the Christian right think about cyberbullying?
What does
the Christian right think about cyberbullying?
Or bullying.
Or bullying. Or lying. Aren't there things in the Bible about lying?
Here we go. Chris in South Amherst says, just hearing the phrase President Trump makes me woozy. I have to remind myself that Trump actually is President of the United States before I can wrap my head around it. And that's from Chris. Hello, panel. Why have the press and the public allowed the Republicans to drop their promise of lower drug costs? This seems completely missing from the discussion. Also, it seems like the Republican plan only provides decreased premiums because insurers will be allowed to sell plans with significantly decreased coverage, higher copays and deductibles. This is not lower cost coverage, just less health care, and that's Pam from Sturbridge. And Larry says, help me understand the process by which moderates might be able to reach across the aisle and broker anything that resembles a solution to the health care crisis we're in. Can a bill advance in the Senate without McConnell's okay? No. Or without Republican committee chairs? No. Is this the path forward? Okay, and that's from Larry. Linda says, Teresa's right. Trump is totally preoccupied with his ego and what people are saying about him. That is his priority. Linda, I didn't say it wasn't his priority. I happen to agree with that. I want you to understand where he's coming from and why he's doing it. And you and I both basically disagree on this. Okay, and so Brucey says, I really believe you're all right. The presidential tweeting is an extremely complex phenomenon. And that's from Brucey. And then the bottom line is that there is no real clues about presidential conduct. There were conventions, and Trump has demonstrated how fragile those were. And that's from Chris. Shark Talk is close when characterizing Trump as nuts and wacko, but more concisely, he suffers from narcissistic personality disorder, which determines all his defensive, reflexive, abusive, lying, near-paranoiac reactions. That's from Stephen. Harleen says, the men on the panel interrupt. Teresa Bourgeois more often because she is a woman.
Oh, no.
She is the smartest and most articulate person on the panel. I do not agree that Trump is tweeting to encourage his base. He's tweeting because he's a compulsive bully and not for any other political reason.
Can I say thank you, but I really fear I interrupt more often, so thank you.
Well,
but I tend to interrupt.
And by the way,
interrupt.
I agree with you.
I really do. I'm still trying to learn this, and I step on people.
No, you're great.
But thank you, but it's not sexist at all.
You're great. And when people trash you, I always defend you.
You always join them.
Because I think you're terrific. Morning all. I don't believe that Trump's base cares that Trump is demeaning the office. They love it. It's draining the swamp. I agree with that. Say SCOTUS upends the system and partisan gerrymander gets banned. What happens? What would be the real life effects of that? Well, the obvious thing is, if the state legislatures, which are heavily gerrymandered right now, become fair fight states and you get more Democratic legislatures, which don't replicate themselves, then Congress, they also, I used to do this question on my Politics 101 classes at New Paltz, which were true or false. The state legislature reapportions itself. True. True or false? Congress reapportions itself, and they'd all write true. I say, no, false. It's the state legislature that does that. That's the whole point.
And when you have 35, I think it is, Republican governors out of 50,
That's what happens. Okay, and then he says something. I liked his first comment, but his second is, Alan equals Larry King of the North. Let me take my finger out of my throat.
Hi, no suspenders.
Hi, panel.
He does have suspenders.
Oh,
now.
You do.
Suspenders.
Yeah. Doesn't have the 7-1.
Maybe he likes. He's a big Larry King
why
fan.
You know why I wear suspenders?
Keep your pants up.
That's right, Joe.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so that's the same reason the chicken crossed the road. Hi, panel. The real reason is Medicare for all. Can the Democrats win pledging to enact that in 2018 and 20 elections? No.
Well, actually, it would be Medicaid expansion and Medicare buy-in. That's where we're headed if this collapses.
No, but I think the question is Medicare for all. The question is, I had raised single payer.
I said,
I think we're going to get there.
De facto.
But it's not going to get there now. Right now, not with this situation.
Well, I don't think you pass a single-payer bill. What you do is incrementally expand Medicare and Medicaid to the point where you have something similar to that.
Hi, panel. I just wanted to thank Alan for his recommendation to see Million Dollar Quartet at the Berkshire Theater Festival. We went yesterday. It was absolutely fantastic. What a fun show with great music. Thank you. And that's from Nancy, a sustaining member and longtime listener. And James says, to put Alan in the hot seat, who should the bridge have been named for, Pete or Mario?
I never thought,
by the way, that the Tappan Zee should be named for Pete. I always thought that the bridge across the Hudson, and written it hundreds of times, should be named for Pete. And we almost were there, except that at the last minute I heard from Pete, who said, cut it out.
It was a bridge too far.
I don't want it.
Right. You know, they can name the Tappan Zee Bridge whatever they want to name it. I don't have any great objections philosophically to it being named the Mario Cuomo Bridge. Only nobody is going to call it the Mario Cuomo Bridge. They're going to call it the Tappan Zee Bridge, just the way people don't call the Tom Dewey Thruway the Tom Dewey Thruway.
Or the Rockefeller Plaza.
Or the Hamilton Fish Mid-Hudson Bridge. You know, the only ones that I... RFK Triborough Bridge, the Ed Koch Queensborough Bridge.
That's disgusting.
None of those names mean it. The only names that historically mean anything, at least in this part of the world, George Washington Bridge, Lincoln Tunnel. Yeah. Can you think of any immediate? I don't know who Holland is.
Corning Tower.
Major Deegan Expressway. There are some because they did not have a name that had already stuck in the public's consciousness.
These legislators are disgusting.
Well, give me a second.
I want to say something.
How important was it to name the Mario Cuomo Bridge, the Tappan Zee Bridge, that the governor, his son, had to put through the message of necessity. What is it called?
Yeah,
when he hustled it through. I mean, that's usually reserved for earth shattering.
No, actually not. Actually not. Messages of necessity were put into the Constitution on the basis that if you had a great tidal wave coming your way, governor would get a message of necessity to the legislature.
But that's not the case here
yeah. ever, because what's happening is because they want these guys to behave like sheep, get them tired. Yeah. Have them by at the middle of the night. What they do is they always misuse messages of necessity.
Well, and what do we say to the Malcolm Wilson family, whose name is already on the original Tappan Zee Bridge?
I think this matters in people's lives. I mean, it's nice honor, but I think it matters in people's lives.
It does not matter to the average person, but it's just an unnecessary honor because nobody's going to name the
Ira. This state legislature is a disgrace. New York is a disgrace. The only reason I might possibly support a constitutional convention is the hope that two things would be put into the state constitution. One, initiative and referendum. So when these bums in the legislature hold everything up because they can, that stops if you get enough petitions, enough people signing a petition, and then you get a vote like we do in Massachusetts. It works. Believe me, it works. Now, sometimes it doesn't, but most of the time it does. And the second thing is term limits. Throw the bums out.
No, there is term limits. It's called voting. I'm opposed to term limits.
I don't care.
There's something called term limits. It's called voting. But can I want to...
No, you're wrong.
But what about the gerrymandering, which we just talked about,
I'm more worried about what happens to the New York City schools if they're left in limbo. I don't know
passed a whole 2 year.
Yeah, he got 1 year.
Did they work it out?
No, I think they said they
because
two,
of that on top being in chaos on top of the budget cuts. It's just those poor kids and their families if they don't straighten this out.
At some point, we really do have to duke this out. This business about initiative and referendum and term limits, because I'll tell you, they have taken such advantage. The incumbency fulfillment is almost 100%. And that's because of the gerrymander, because the way they've set the whole thing up, it's disgusting and everybody knows it. And by the way, all the polls show, if you give people a chance to vote on term limits, even though they love their individual legislator, they will vote for it in a New York second because they understand how corrupt the state is.
I'm against term limits. I think we should have. Anyway.
I would be against term limits if there was a fair fight. And there's not a fair fight when the districts are gerrymandered in such a way as to settle the issue before the people walk in.
Term limits just strengthen lobbyists. You need to have members who have long-term experience and understand how the system works.
Oh, yeah, they're doing brilliantly right now.
Well, I think that term limits just strengthen lobbyists and they're not elected, and that's a problem.
All right. We'll pause there. We'll take a break. We'll get news from Ray and hear a couple messages when we come back. We'll continue our conversation for the last part of the program. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. 6 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Very nice to have you with us. You want to talk about who's with us? Alan Shartok is right here.
Yo.
Ira Fussfeld is with us, and Teresa Bourgeois, we welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. While you were listening to Ray do the news, while you were listening to...
The music.
What are you giggling about?
She spends too much. She's got spends too much time in front of that computer.
Wow! All of a sudden, Teresa has just lost it. What's wrong there?
Mika's retweet.
What did Mika say?
Oh wow! Oh, look at that.
Mika tweeted a photo made for little hands, and somebody picking up Cheerios.
Oh, there we go. So
I don't get it.
Well,
they're always talking about his little hands, the president's little hands. So she's giving him a shot back.
She shot back.
All good for Mika, all good for the president.
It works well for both of them and not for the country.
Yeah. All right. So, we got letters, so let's go to the letters.
All the talk about this fallout from Trump's mental is interesting. However, what can we do about it? Please talk about that.
Well,
we can vote him out of office in 3.5 years. He's already running for re-election, went to a fundraiser in his own hotel last night. And in the meantime, we've got to find some people in his party with backbone and in his White House with backbone to say, stop this junk.
That's one I'm sorry, Joe. I had another idea called St. Elizabeth's.
Well, that's
In Washington, you know, for the mentally ill. And,
the little white truck.
And say there's a crazy guy in the White House. He's going to kill people. Please go get him.
Yeah, I think two things. I think one is it will be important how Republicans react to this. And also one of the things we can do is not fall for it and just focus on the issues, like talking about sending 4,000 more troops to Afghanistan this week and what that means for their family. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I agree with all of you, except that I also think that the Democrats have to step up to the plate here, too, which they don't seem to be doing. And for some reason, and I understand the reasons why, but the focus has been squarely on Nancy Pelosi, and I don't know if that's fair or not.
Well, it may not be fair. It's what they do. Obviously, it's what they do. They think look, Nancy Pelosi is not popular in this country, and they know it, and they poll on it, and then they play to it. So you may not think it's fair. I certainly don't think it's fair, but that's what these
My question being, if they replaced her, would we be in a different position than we are in
now? No, absolutely not.
Maybe not.
And could you make the same argument of her lack of leadership in regards to Chuck Schumer?
You're relating the two of them in terms of effectiveness?
Yes.
Oh, I think Schumer is more popular.
If she wasn't popular or effective, they wouldn't be attacking her.
I heard an interview, a podcast with David Axelrod interviewing Donna Bash of CNN. Did you hear that?
Great
yeah,
podcast.
And she, they were both saying how spectacularly qualified and how much of a leader that Pelosi is.
Right.
The general public does not appreciate how well she serves that role. That said, she has become the demon, the face of the party, and so the Democrats have to make a determination: is it as important for her to be our leader because we need her as our leader?
You know, let's focus on what matters. Pelosi is not the issue today.
No, but can I get to Ira for a second in this, because now we're talking politics.
Yeah.
Tenney is under attack from the 24th.
Claudia Tenney, right.
Claudia Tenney in the 24th or whatever the congressional district is. And a guy from Utica is going to go after her, who's an assemblyman, I believe. And the first thing
Anthony Brindisi.
Brindisi. The first thing she says is that this is a Pelosi lookalike. That's basically what you're facing. Now, I'm sorry, I know you're holding up your hand, Teresa, and I will go right to you, but it seems to me if the question is, do we want a House of Representatives, which is Democratic in orientation, do we say, okay, coach, you did a great job for us for a while, but now we got to move you along? I'm done.
Did you want to respond to that?
I just don't think I think Nancy Pelosi is very good at inside baseball in holding her caucus together. She's very, very good at raising money and distributing money.
But this
and
is not inside.
But no matter who is the Democratic leader of the House, they will be attacked. And I don't think she will be here after the next election because she wants to retire. I think she would have retired if Hillary Clinton had won, but given the country she stayed. But I don't think right now today I don't think that's the issue at hand. I think the issue at hand is the travel ban and what that will do to our democracy. I think the issue at hand today is South Korea and what is President Trump going to do in talking with the leader of South Korea about North Korea.
Well, they
what about the fact that he hasn't staffed his... I understand you're talking politics, but I just don't think that's the
issue. You understand I'm talking politics. Wait a second. Everything you're talking about is substantive policy. But you can't get there. You can't get the yeses, the Republicans always say, if you can't have a Democratic House of Representatives.
And although there is politics involved here, if you're a Democrat, you ought to be thinking politics, because the reality is there's a political election coming up in another year and a half. So,
and it all leads to everything that Teresa is concerned
right.
about. All of those things will be changed if you have a Democratic House.
But the way you get a Democratic House is that you raise money and you hold your caucus together, and she's doing those
Wait,
two things.
Wait, how does holding a caucus together help you get a Democratic House?
Because you have a common message.
These Democrats are never going to have a common message, and it leads to another issue. There are still Democrats who are saying, if you don't believe in abortion, you should not be a Democrat. There are those who are saying, no, we need every camel's nose under the tent that we can possibly find. I have to agree with that.
I think I agree that you have to find the right candidate for the right district and who can win. And that's one thing that I hope that they're doing. I don't know. Certainly when Rahm Emanuel was there, who's now the mayor of Chicago, he was very, very effective at that. Patrick Kennedy, the same thing. When he was in the House, he spent 2 years doing that, going around the country, working to help find the right candidates in the key districts so that the Democrats could win.
So
I hope there's somebody doing that
now. Do you think
it's
a good thing?
That's not her job.
Is her job. Do you think it?
No. It's not. There's a person. There's always a designated person.
Yeah, but who does the designating?
Yeah.
Right.
Do you think it's a good thing that right now there are, I believe, 8 people who have already stepped forward among the Democrats to run against Faso? Should that – now, they're obviously free to make those announcements, and they're free to run. But do you think that that is going to ultimately prove beneficial for the Democratic Party?
Well, let me try to answer that one, because it's interesting. You got all these guys – all these people who want to run against Faso. On the other hand, all the county chairs got together and picked Faso – a teach-out.
Yeah.
And they were wrong. She was not a good candidate. So somehow they thought, because of her name recognition and everything else, that she would do well. We did the first, I think, of the debates right here. He wiped up the floor with her. It was terrible.
But
you have to pick the right person too.
But as you're fond of saying, that was then and this is now. A lot has changed with the election of Donald Trump.
I know. The last 3 special elections we're talking about. There'll be people who call and say I'm wrong, and I can handle it. But the last 3 special elections, they picked bad candidates.
But I think if there's a circular firing squad where all they're doing is yapping at each other and tearing each other down, that's a problem. But if they're all focused on changing the conversation and educating the constituency in that district about a comparison between what they would do and what Faso is doing, then, you know, which is a very hard thing to ask.
Oh,
you know, that would be better. It's not likely going to happen.
We certainly didn't see that in the Republican primary.
And that's not the way they run.
That's right.
I just want to get to the Alan has letters, but I just want to get to MSNBC put out a statement just a moment ago that said it's a sad day for America when the president spends his time bullying, lying, and spewing petty personal attacks instead of doing his job.
Well, yes, and CNN just had a Chiron on that described the tweet as vicious, and then they just showed a tweet that Meghan McCain of Fox News, and of course she's no fan of the Democrats, also knocking from a female point of view that this was inappropriate.
And he has a lot of he uses this female stuff and blood a lot.
Yeah.
I think everybody understands what that's about.
Karen DeWitt tweeted about that very thing. But you know, it's just there's I know I'm wonky. It's frightening because there's so many important things going on right now.
I think we all agree with that,
nobody disagrees with that.
Yeah. I know, but I know you have to talk about this stuff, but to me, it's really chipping. This is chipping away at our democracy
more
in a frightening
people
way.
All right,
let me chip.
Will be offended. More people will be offended by this tweet than any of the in-the-weeds, wonky, substantive, wonderful stuff you talk to us about, where you know more about it than anybody.
But the travel ban today, you know.
You think the people really care about the travel ban?
No, but they, well, they did, right?
But they do care about the president bullying Mika.
Right.
And so, you know, if you're a political operations person, which you are,
right,
then you take what you get.
Right. And that's why this, as we've all said, how the Democrats react to this. But how are the Republican leaders going to react to this? Are they going to say, oh, well, I'm not going to respond tweet by tweet?
They're going to shut up.
At what point do they step in and say this is not
at the point at which they want? At the point at which they don't care about being a white-haired United States 6'7" senator coming before those microphones.
What's wrong
on
with
CNN?
Being 6'7"?
Nothing at all. Not
I wish I was 6'7".
And you don't have white hair yet.
Look at
it. It's getting there.
Let's go to the letters. That's right.
Don't attract my friend Mika.
Whiter now than it was at 9.
Luke says, the outer bridge crossing in Staten Island, the outermost bridge crossing in New York State, southern end, is named for Eugenius Harvey Outer Bridge. Isn't that interesting?
I heard that recently.
I did not know that.
I just learned that a few weeks ago.
There's a fun fact. Yeah.
Also, the Jackie Robinson Parkway has supplanted the name Interborough Parkway.
That's a fair point.
And the Joe DiMaggio Highway is still known universally as the West Side Highway.
I would hope so.
Yep. The nation never turned its lonely eyes to the sign, apparently. Very good.
Henry Hudson Parkway.
Very clever. Get that the nation.
Netflix documentary Get Me Roger Stone does a lot to explain Trump's behavior, the method to his madness, in quotes. Both Stone and Trump are proteges of Roy Cohn. Meanwhile, the money keeps rolling in. It's disgusting.
That's a fascinating documentary. Have you seen it? The Roger Stone
documentary?
You don't have to like him to
yeah, that's a point.
You hate him more. Just bring a bottle of Jack Daniels while you're watching it.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating and frightening.
I don't drink. Although, I have to say, at this hour, that I'm ready to start drinking again. Pass the diet.
Am I driving you to drink?
No. Thank you. Panel, you need to accept the fact that we have no president, period, and stop wringing your hands over Trump. Oh, yeah, right. And as he sends people into any one of these foreign countries, Afghanistan, anything else, we'll just say, well, we're not going to wring our hands over him anymore. Yeah. Our agency is an institution soldier on in despite of him, not under him. No, that's not true.
No.
That's just wrong, Kathy. And I appreciate the fact that you're writing. The president appoints the agency heads. And when you get an agency head, for example, you say here, our agency is an institution soldier on in spite of him. Come on. He's got a climate denier as the head of the EPA.
85% of the science positions in the federal government are not filled yet. What was the number last night about the State Department? That just so many positions in the State Department have gone unfilled. It's just
for a reason,
right? It's just unbelievable.
Okay, and Bernard says, Bernie says, all the talk about the fallout from Trump's mental is interesting. However, what can we do? We talked about that already. Okay, all right. Rochelle says, cut out the talk about the tweets. Dear beautiful panel, I like that. Nearly half of U.S. adults have at least one chronic disease. The government predicts 1 in 3 could have diabetes by 2050 and that 40% of Americans will get cancer. Healthcare costs explode because we do little to promote health and prevent disease. It's hard to imagine any good way to pay for the irresponsibility and senseless waste in our current healthcare system. Fixing healthcare for real will require putting health promotion at the top of our priority list. Right.
Okay,
and Judy says, you, the panel, are the anti-bullies. You are keeping me informed. You remind me we all have work to do and keep laughing. And that's love from Judy, and we love you for understanding that you can't shoot yourself in the head. You got to have fun at the same time you're trying to tell the truth.
Lindsey Graham.
What do you want to talk about, Lindsey Graham?
His response.
Okay.
Mr. President, your tweet was beneath the office and represents what is wrong with American politics, not the greatness of America.
Well, I was just going to say before you read that, wouldn't it be fascinating if we could just have a vote of every Republican in the Senate and in the House? How many of you believe that this tweet was appropriate? And let's just see how many hands go up.
Well,
and I'm glad Lindsey Graham is one who would.
How many of you agree with?
Although
it was
he has been pretty good at
supporting the president.
At coming out against many of the president's
well, in the beginning, yeah, but now lately he's been a very well-trained dog. Now I have to say that the way they got Joe McCarthy was to have the Senate censure him. Now, I can only say to that, this kind of Lindsey Graham response is pretty hopeful that he may go over the track at some point.
There just has to be a statement, you know, common decency, to borrow another McCarthy era phrase from Joseph Wells, have you no decency? McConnell and Ryan have got to stand up behind the microphones and say, look, we have differences in this country and in this Congress, but we cannot support these kinds of comments. This is not the level of discourse, it's never going to happen, but that's what needs to happen.
You know, Ira, there's a big difference between these two men. One guy is young, he wants to be president of the United States, and he's not going to do any deviation from that. He's been very
disciplined. So he's calculating that but getting up and speaking against the Trump like that would be not beneficial for him?
38% of the American
people. Ultimately, he needs that base. He needs that base that Trump is appealing
to. We're in
big
trouble
now,
in
McConnell,
this country.
On the other hand.
Okay, but I'm having trouble with the fact that, and I know we'll get letters, and everything, so screw it.
We don't
care. But the question is, I'm having problems with the fact that we're taking it for granted that even that 38% all support a tweet like that. I mean, I think even among those people, you're going to find. I mean, you may still like the guy, but you don't have to like that type of behavior.
I hope you're right. That's all I got to say. I hope you're right. But when Hillary made that awful comment about a basket of deplorables, I have a feeling that we have a group in this country who don't like women, who think they're who don't think they're in their right place, and who don't like black people, and who don't like people who think too much of themselves. Yeah, what?
No, I agree with you. I think that's a great point, though. But we were able to, people on the left were able to say, okay, I don't like her using that term basket of deplorables. I didn't like it.
Right.
But I was able to at least say, okay, I don't like it. I support her. I support her ideas. But I don't like what she said in that case. And I hope we see a similar thing here.
Well, Joe, I hope you're right, because I talked to an awful lot of people who say she shouldn't have said it, but I believe it.
I hope we don't forget that we have a president of the United States who's banning people from coming into the country based on their religion. And as we go into the 4th of July, where we celebrate the founding of our country, that's fundamentally
against the
founding
of our country. But, Teresa, that's already in the Supreme Court. They've made a temporary decision, and it's going to get played out in the court. And we're a society of laws, and we're going to do what the Supreme Court says is legal or not legal. I wouldn't waste too much time thinking about that today.
Well, beginning today and over the next few days, what's going to get played out is how they interpret.
I can't disagree with you, but it's already in the court, and nothing is going to change between now and when they hear the case and then when they rule on it.
Well, that's not true, because depending on how they implement this, there might be additional legal action in the next 24, 48 hours.
Well, we're just out of time. That's all. We're out of time.
So good. And then we'll take it up again.
Yeah, we'll take it up again. We love you all.
Tweet politely.
Tweet politely. We'll be back after this.